One, two, three, four. Just another day at my dead-end profession. I'm living day to day. Yeah, listening to some good old country records on the radio. And yeah, what else can I say?
Thank you for tuning back in. The usual guys are all here. I'm sure you know us by now, but if you don't, I'm Ryan. That's Dave and Bobby.
So the three of us just
did two shows back to back, Thursday and Friday.
Was that not the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde?
Oh, yeah,
that was like the two ends
of the spectrum, really.
Honestly, so last night we almost like triple headlined in Ocean Beach. At the spot that I first started at, the place I did my first open mic ever at.
So it was like a homecoming of sorts for
you. Yeah, and which is always kind of nice, you know, because back then, like, even just at a crummy little bar near the sand, even then when you're starting out, like, hey, can I get on the book show? Like, never!
Right.
You know, it just seems so far away. So headlining is like a little cool thing for me.
Yeah.
But it was a great room, and I really needed that because I had this thing where I played two empty shows back to back. I did the Frog with approximately two people there, and that was two more people than the show we played like in El Cajon.
Yeah. Oh my god,
that was tough.
When you do two shows empty back to back, you start to like get like, am I even a real comedian anymore?
Right.
Am I just getting paid to like play make-believe? What if there was a show here?
It suddenly becomes like a weird version of the Truman Show where you're like, but wait, I'm supposed to do comedy, but there's no people. And like,
and they refuse to call it, you know, like, so, like, again, I've said this so many times. If you're a promoter and your comics get there and you don't have an audience for them, give them like half, if not all the money you were supposed to, and you'd be like, sorry about this, go home.
You know that moment in a horror movie when someone figures out who the killer is right before the killer gets them? I had that moment at the bar show because they called the show. Like, all right, we're not going to do it. We had set up our own equipment.
Yeah, this was Thursday night.
Thursday night. So we're sitting around chatting because, you know, he bought us each a drink, which is cool. We're sitting around chatting, and I start looking around, and I'm like, hey, guys, you want to start packing up? And you guys either didn't hear me or ignored me, which either one doesn't hurt my feelings. I don't care. Whatever. But about a minute later, the owner came over and was like, some people came in. You guys want to go ahead and do the show? And I was like, God damn it. Saw this coming.
Now, here's the problem. This is the problem. We are friends. We have a good time when we're just hanging out at a bar.
Yeah.
That good time, we were all sitting in a circle. There's like six comedians. We were all having a good, our buddy John Groobs was there. We were having a good time, laughing it up, having a blast. After the show had been called, to anyone from the outside, they're like, oh man, look how much fun this is. Let's get these guys on stage.
Yeah.
We should have been the assholes who hate each other. We could have sulked, sat there sadly drinking our beers, got up and left.
And you know what? The thing is, the toss-up was we leave, no pay.
Yep.
You know, if we do it, no matter how horrible it is, they're still going to pay us. So I did open it up to the group.
Right.
And this is what drives me insane about you two. I said, all right, guys, this is a democracy. Do we leave with no pay or do we tough it out and do the show? I will take a vote right now.
This is six guys standing in a circle. No one says a word.
Yep. Yes. I'm like, guys, anybody? And everyone's like, I don't care. I don't care. And
Ryan turns to Bobby first. And Bobby, what'd you say?
I say I abstain.
Yeah, he said he abstains. So I just happened to be standing next to Bobby. So obviously Ryan turns to me. I just looked at my shoes and took a step backwards. That was my move.
And so I'm like, so no one cares? I'm like, well, we're already down here. They all want to see us. Because again, like Bobby said, we were all just hanging out in a circle after thinking the show had been canceled.
Right.
And we're making each other laugh like hysterically.
Yeah, because we're having fun. There is that weird thing too where, you know, everybody thinks, oh, you're a comedian. You must love being on stage. Yeah, you do when it's fun, when you have a good show. But when you show up to a show like we did, and there's literally six people in a bar, you get this dread like, oh, shit, I hope we're not doing that. When that goes away, because we had called the show, it's like the Axeman has been told to pull his axe back. He doesn't have to cut your head off.
Yeah.
You're sitting there, and you're like, this is great. Now we can just sit and have fun and drink a beer. So it's even more jovial and fun, and we're having a fucking blast in this bar.
And so two things. Number one, I got so fucking annoyed with you two because I'm like, all right, well, if no one cares, then we're going to do the show. And everyone went, oh, God damn it. I'm like, why didn't you say anything, you fucking assholes?
Hey, in my defense, I only said that in my head, not out loud.
That's true.
So anyway, so there's that. Number two, though, and we toughed through it. We started doing traditional stand-up. I'm like, this is awkward. So
well,
I
we
just
threw Andrew to the wolves. We put him up first.
Yeah.
He was doing jokes, and we were like, this is not working.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, and let's put this in context, at this point, there was literally six people in the bar. a couple came in, and when something about comedy got mentioned, I think they said they were excited and they wanted to hear it, and the owner was
That's
like,
"That's when
right.
the owner came over, hey, there's some people that want to see right. you. Want to do the show?" We're like, all right.
So this couple comes, and we figure, like, okay, well, they must be really into stand-up. They sit in the front table, front row center.
Yep.
The guy puts his back to the stage, and they begin loudly having
talking
a conversation.
To each other.
Yeah. So, like, it's not even you're performing to six people now, or the eight people we thought we'd be performing for. It's like negative two people, yeah. because now we have somebody else talking.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so now, the thing is, the way I looked at it, I'm like, since there were so few people in that bar, I'm like, they're essentially just paying us to talk to them.
Yeah. Right.
And I'm fine with that. Like
right. it's therapy.
I'm talking to them anyway. Let's put a mic in my hand and now it's lucrative.
Well, right. I think the thought we all had as well was that the owner was there. He was excited to have us. He was bummed that there wasn't a good turnout.
Yeah.
But then he was excited to put the show back on when that couple came in. So I think we all thought as this train wreck left the station, we're like, oh, he had already rebooked us for a future date. So yeah. we're like, ooh, I wonder if he's going to pull that date after seeing this mess.
Right,
Well, also, there's this thing of, like, when he comes up and asks, he had already rebooked us. And then yeah. he said, do you guys want to go again? There's a little bit of an obligation of, like, oh, shit, this guy is putting us on a little bit later.
So, yeah, so we pulled everyone on stage. We essentially had a live podcast in front of people. Yeah.
I must say, I was very, very impressed because I've done a lot of hard rooms. The Kumite is a very hard room. There's a lot of hard bar shows I have done. That pretty much takes the cake in terms of hard bar shows. Six people in an audience, yeah. two extra people loudly talking with their back to you, zero laughs, zero people on the thing. And Ryan, you did something super interesting, which I've never seen somebody do. And I think this was like a master class in horrible shows, which is you got up on stage, you were just kind of like messing around, talking with the audience, and you started bringing the other comedians up with you, and you essentially had a council of five comedians on stage just chatting about what was going on. Like
and
you said,
all of
like
a sudden,
like,
everyone started to laugh and
yes,
get into yeah. it. And
yes, because so it stopped being a performer and started to be this weird, I don't know, alt comedy group dynamic.
And they're
thing.
Still getting a show that yeah. they paid for. Yeah. So I felt good about that. Now, the thing is, what I was thinking of, what this whole thing made me think of, you know, last night's good show, the previous night's bad show, is I kind of miss, no, I very much miss when comedy was fun.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I'm not saying that I don't enjoy it anymore, but, like, I remember, I miss the days, even though I was making $0 per show yeah. and only getting, like, 8 to 10 minutes, I miss, like, being at work on, like, a Friday and knowing I had a show yeah. that night and just being just electrified all day. Like, oh, man, there's a fucking show. I would get home. I couldn't even eat. I was so excited.
Yeah.
I would just go right in the shower, right in the show clothes, and just sit there and wring my hands and wait for showtime.
Yep.
I can't believe a show tonight. Yes, it's going to be so much fun. And then now I look at my calendar. Like, Aaron's like, yeah, you want to go to the movies? Let me check. I have a show tonight. Fuck!
Yeah, that's
every time I see that I have a show that night, that's my response. It's
yeah.
I do love that comedian energy. I had the same thing going. I actually started doing stand-up while I was working out in the desert, so I would not only get super excited all day.
He's telling jokes to the bodies that he's yeah. digging out of the ground.
Not only
this guy knows what I'm talking about.
Just real dead crowd, huh?
I put a hat on a cactus. Like, no, so not only was I super psyched all day, but then I would drive at 90 miles an hour from El Centro back to San Diego the entire time I'm practicing my act. I got this big smile on my face, and now I do the same thing that you do. Like, oh, I got another one.
Yeah, but, I almost... I'm sorry, go ahead.
But I do like that energy. We had a kid come to Kumite this past week who had never done stand-up before, and he came up to me before the show, and he's like, hey, I've never done it. This is my first time.
That is a rough first spot.
That's what I told him. I warned him. I was like, listen, I just want to tell you flat off the bat, this is not a good spot for your first mic. And by the way, that was one of the worst in terms of audience just yelling and running stuff. We had a biker gang of bicyclists show
Club.
Up. No, no, yeah. no. They were on bicycles. I can call them a gang. They're not going to do anything to me. But they were kind of shady. They were cuts. A lot of them had Raiders jerseys, which are just kind of like... A Raiders jersey just means, like, I will stab you if you say the wrong thing. So there was a lot of those guys there. They were just yelling. And this kid did pretty well on his first time. But I loved the enthusiasm he had. That was my favorite part of Kumite. There was a bunch of comedians who came through who had their first show or their first night or their first time on stage or one of their first times there. And I always love seeing that for that exact reason you just mentioned. That enthusiasm, that excitement, and like being able to say like, hey, we're not the shitty scene where people step on you and all this stuff. Hey, come on in. I went over, I introduced them to the other comedians. Hey, here are the guys. You're going to need to know these promoters, that kind of thing. Like, it feels good to be able to take those people on their first time and be like, hey, welcome to the community.
Yeah. You know, and the thing is, some people, when I tell people that, some people ask like, oh, so when money got involved, it stopped being fun? No. money got involved because I refused to stay on this hamster wheel if I'm not being compensated. It got to that point. When newer comics are like, hey, Ryan, how do I know when it's like it's time to start asking for money? When you can't bear to do this anymore, that's when it's time to start asking for money, to the point where you don't care if they say, no, I'm not paying you, because you go, good, now I don't have to do it. So, and then that's when you start realizing what your price tag is, because it's like, all right, I need some money. Like, okay, that's not enough money anymore. That's this is crushing my soul. I need $100 to show you my soul being crushed.
Well, you also have these regrets that come to you based on your past experiences, like the El Cajon show that we did, right? So you have that show, you just do it, and then we got told we were doing this, or we knew we were doing this show the next night over in Ocean Beach. This was a room that I hadn't been to in like 5 years, and when I was there, it was a very different energy. I went to like an open mic in like 2013 or something, and it was like you would walk in.
It was dog shit.
You'd walk in and there was like, it was weird feeling and empty. There wasn't a lot of laughter or fun to it. And one promoter, Alan Henderson, has taken that place over and just changed it. It's like, it's happy. There's a bunch of people there. They're excited. It's a great place to go.
There are people filling the front row.
Yeah, it was
you never saw that
show.
Before.
Yeah, that's rare.
And so I think what happens is you need people like Henderson to get a hold of bad shows and just make them good.
Yeah. Speaking of shows, Mr. Bill Cosby's in the news for something other than raping people for a change. He apparently the Cosmeister showed up to a jazz club unannounced.
Oh, he just did a pop-in spot?
He did a pop-in spot. He had to be led to the stage because he's blind now. Oh. And I saw this footage. And, okay, so the camera starts up. And Bill Cosby's being led to the stage. That's where it starts. And the female MC is going, Mr. Bill Cosby in the house. No, she's still calling him doctor. They took that back. Yeah, that's been rescinded. She's like, Dr. Bill Cosby.
That's someone who still believes in him and is like, oh, he got a bad rap.
Well,
they're just an MC that's trying to do their job.
Yeah, what would you do, man? Yeah.
Wouldn't call him doctor.
Okay, so she's saying, and she even like awkwardly says in the house a second time. She's like, Dr. Bill Cosby. In the house. And so I can see everyone in that audience, and they're just kind of clapping like, what should we do?
Right.
Oh, boy. And they're like, it's this weird, I can imagine where they're coming from in their head, because 4 years ago, this would have been the greatest night of their lives. This is all right. It's an all black jazz club, by the way. Old timers too.
Is it in Philadelphia?
It might have been. Okay. I'm not sure where it was. However, in an all black jazz club, 4 years ago, black heroes went fucking Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, Abraham Lincoln, Cosby, and then like
how Abraham Lincoln became black.
Yeah, that's a weird order, but okay.
He freed the slaves. He's not on there.
You're saying heroes of black people, not necessarily black heroes.
Yes, that's okay. What I meant. Okay. Keep up. So, anyways,
hey, when we're both questioning you, it's not us that needs to keep up. All right?
Everyone in the room's an asshole but me.
Black heroes like Andy Dick.
Throw Al Jolson on there.
Garrison Keillor.
So this guy has probably been a lifelong hero to most of these people in the room before finding out what a horrible human being he was. Like, this is like what happens when people see OJ, this like fucking monster that's walking in, who you loved your whole life though,
right?
And now he's doing this impromptu thing. You don't know what you do in that fucking situation. everyone likes to make themselves a hero in their hypothetical.
Right. I would stand up and say no sir.
Yes, and I'd slap him across his blind face. You don't know what you would do until it happens.
Yeah.
And even me, if Bill Cosby was just all of a sudden showed up in a place, I'd be like, I don't know, am I doing something wrong? I don't
What do you think he did? Do you think he came in and like jumped into it and been like, listen guys, about the stuff, and had to address it? Or do you think he just decided to do like a completely normal stuff? Like
How about this
North Korea stuff, guys?
I would guess, I didn't see it, but I would guess he would just ignore it all. That'd be my
guess. 100% ignored it.
Absolutely.
What's he gonna say, man? Like,
you gotta address the elephant room.
No.
You got to.
If you don't address the elephant, it's not there.
Did you ever ever see an erroneous paper article about you in the news? Did you ever have a lying bitch say some fibs?
Or 55 of them.
You ever have a big conspiracy with the Janice Dickinson? Oh. So anyways, no, I saw the material. He's talking about being blind and everything. And again, you could cut the fucking awkwardness with a knife in that room. And the thing is, I'm watching the footage, and he's clearly working out some premises for what? You're seven.
Yeah, is he gonna record a new
special? You are 134 years old, Bill. It's time to hang it up.
I got a Netflix deal. Though this is kind of what I think is the justice, which is while you say, and I agree, you know, you get on shows and sometimes you're like, oh, fuck, I got a show tonight. There's still nothing better than doing well on a good show. Like last night was really fun, right? Like we had a lot of fun doing well because it was a nice audience. It was a good show.
Yeah.
There's something about being a comedian where you do need that. You need to regularly get up on stage, do well, have good shows. That makes you feel good. It completes you in a weird way.
Are you saying Bill Cosby is trying to get his joy back? Or did I miss a weird segue
essentially,
here?
One of the things I think that's kind of the unspoken justice.
I need the people to like me again.
There's an unspoken justice to this situation, which is, listen, you're never going to take away Bill Cosby's money. He's so old by the time a lawsuit goes through, he's gonna die a millionaire. That's the fact.
He's gonna be buried with it. Like a fucking,
come and get it.
Yeah, like a pharaoh in Egypt.
He lived his life with the same amount of money, with respect, all this stuff. He will
respect's
die.
Debatable.
No, he lived it with respect until now. He will die with a bunch of money. So in some way, you're like, fuck, he's never gonna pay for what he did. He'll never really have to stand up to the consequences. The one exception is, as a stand-up his entire life and somebody who became popular younger and got to demolish clubs and do really well, he will never get that experience again. And there is some justice to that of like, oh, yeah, that
not
drug,
as much as being raped.
Yeah.
Not even close.
I understand that. But it seems otherwise that there's absolutely no justice in the situation. He's not going to do jail time. He's going to be rich his whole life, everything like that. But knowing that he won't be able to get his fix, he won't be able to get that great audience appreciation. What is he, like you said, what's he working shit out for? He's not doing a tour. He's not doing another Netflix special. He's not doing anything. Knowing that, that's a little bit of justice.
Okay.
There's a sad realization there is that I now think that we're all receiving the same punishment as him, just without the riches and respect that came before it.
Yep. Yeah. All we can hope for is some awkward clapping by people that are looking at me like a rapist.
Yeah, Bobby's like, his punishment is he's one of us now.
That's, you have to live my life.
Nothing worse than that.
Except with a lot of money. The other thing that happened at a comedy club, I don't know if you saw this, there's a viral footage going on, very scary footage of a comic getting attacked on stage.
Yeah.
By a fucking audience member. And this audience member looks rough, dude. This guy looks like a thug. He had that like gigantic one dreadlock,
and,
which is disgusting and scary.
And he immediately went for the mic stand, which if you guys have never picked up a mic stand, the base of which is like 15 pounds and you can
do
a lot of fucking damage with.
Dude, and when I first saw the video, I thought it was a work. I thought it was like something they were doing. But he swung the mic stand so hard that the bass flew off and hit the wall. I was like, oh no, this is real.
Yeah, that's real.
Well, it starts off, the guy jumps on stage and he tries to square off with him. And to this comic's credit, this guy can bob and weave. Yeah. This guy's had some training. I'm like, dude, that guy has taken a boxing class or two. So anyway, this guy's bobbing and weaving. The guy goes to the mic stand. Now, he tries to swing it at him. The bass flies and hits the retaining wall. But then the guy still has the pole.
Yeah.
And that's almost more dangerous because now he can fucking wield it.
Now you're fencing.
Yes. Now he's got a foil.
Right.
So anyway, he's swinging it at him. And like the audience is just sitting there like, this sucks.
Yeah.
I want my money. Yeah. So like finally, like, these two audience members like get up, no tackle.
Well, no. You have to go through it. He then throws the pole, then he picks up the stool.
The stool.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Chucks the stool, hits the guy with the stool. After he's now disarmed, then people get up and like usher him kind of kindly off stage. I was also hoping for the tackle from behind.
That is what I was so upset, because they gingerly like patted him on the back, like,
oh yeah,
hey, let's go, man.
Yeah.
Hey, he's not worth it. I'm like, get someone to fucking throat tackle him now.
Sucker punch something.
Yeah, I'm like, there was no satisfaction in that.
Right,
so
absolutely.
What it's brought to attention is something that most non-comics, or even comics for that matter, really think about, is the lack of security at most fucking stand-up clubs. I've played hundreds of clubs, and I've nary seen a fucking bruiser at the door,
right?
Unless it was a bar, a rowdy bar, and he was just there for that.
Now you guys have to put yourself in someone else's shoes in this situation, because you two are the exception in the comedy scene, that you both have fight training.
Right,
backwards.
Right, exactly. That's what,
like,
I'm saying.
If either one of you were at a show where that would happen, I imagine either one of you would probably step in and try to defuse it.
I'd be like, yes!
Normally, you're dealing with regular comics.
Yeah. And, they're
also the door guys. They're the security.
Right, that's my point. Like, first of all, comics, not a ass-kicker demographic. They,
right.
A lot of basement dwellers and Reddit right. contributors there.
Yeah.
A lot of guys that live with mom and smoke a lot of pot and aren't really keeping the weight under control.
Right.
So, I mean, that's your demographic. They're a timid bunch. And then they make them be the door guys because comedy clubs know that they can get your fucking comics to work essentially for free.
Right.
And, you know, for stage time.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know, 90% of fucking comedy clubs I walk into, there is an overweight, pasty dork with a neck beard. So they're like, it's $2 unless you're on the show. I'm like, this is who's keeping an eye on things? This guy? Like, if things pop off, I got Brandon over here that's never taken a punch, except when he got beat up by a girl that one time.
He's got a security shirt on, though, so that does help.
They always have a security shirt on. And like at our home club, there's been a couple incidences, man. One of which involved a fucking gun. We talked about that last week. I'm like, dude, these guys have no training. They don't have a guard card.
Right.
You know? And like, you are in an environment where there is alcohol and there is, on most nights, at least one person saying some pretty offensive shit to somebody, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't matter who you are. You're going to take offense to one thing one guy says, probably.
Right.
Or someone is, my point.
You want to know what's funny? We did a show, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks ago at a brewery that was really good. And the lady who set it up, who was one of the bartenders, had set it up for us. She really took care of us, showed us our backstage area, showed us our table and stuff. And then she looked at us and she goes, "And if anyone gives you any shit, I'll drag them out of here by their ear." She says, like, something like that. And I looked at her and I was like, I feel oddly secure with this 115-pound woman, more so than I do in most bars and clubs.
Obviously, I have an erection.
Yeah.
So, anyways, yeah, and the thing is, most comics don't even think about it either. Like, most, I see a lot of comics, and it's becoming a bigger trend here in San Diego, where these lengthy dorks are like, go up there and just, like, attack audience members, like, "Hey, look at this fucking idiot." I'm like, dude, that guy rushes the stage, you're fucking dead. I can tell.
Right.
I'm like, I have assessed the situation. That guy's got biceps. You have snappy retorts. Like, let's see him pull that out of a holster, huh? So they're not thinking about it. And there's no bigger offender than these things that are springing up, these house mics and backyard mics, where they just bark in strangers into someone's home. And already it's happened, like, here in San Diego, one random stranger that they took in off the streets to have an audience for their shitty little house mic, like, tried to force himself on a female comedian, like, right in front of a lot of people. And, yeah, while she's on stage, and it was like, "Whoa, how could this have happened?" I'm like, "Really? We're not doing the math here at all?" And they're like, "Well, that probably won't happen again." I'm like, get security. I'm sure you have one friend who's big and played football in college. I'm sure.
The thing that I like, I don't know if you guys remember this, about 6 months ago or maybe even a year ago, a video came out of a guy who was on stage, he was doing a routine, and then another comedian who apparently had been a problem in that community, and it was not in California, someplace else, he got super mad and he rushed the guy on stage.
Was this a Sparta kick?
Yes, and he front kicked him to the solar plexus and dropped the dude. And it was awesome.
And the dude got kicked was like an older guy,
too,
right?
Yeah, but fuck him. He was rushing the guy.
You know, he had the little weird tinfoil hat on, it sadly drifted to the ground like a cartoon.
It was a great kick, too. I think this should be a training for all comedians. If you're on stage, your best option for defending yourself if somebody rushes you, you got to take the higher ground. There's a reason that's a saying. You have a statistical advantage. The second somebody tries to get from offstage to onstage, you got to front kick them in the face or the chest. That's your only option.
Oh, yeah. That's it. You have about 2 second window where even if you are a meek little dork, you can get a powerful kick that'll send them flying into the table.
I want you to edit this part out of the podcast because I'm afraid we're going to see a lot of shitty open micers using that maneuver to keep the host off the stage while they just continue to run their bad material.
That is a good idea. The best part about a front kick is the front kick is literally the easiest kick they teach. It's like the first kick they teach you in Taekwondo because it's so easy. You can do it with like almost no training. So just practice your front kick on a heavy bag 2 or 3 times and you're fine. You can kick everybody off stage.
Sure. I asked you guys this question before we went on the air. I was just thinking of this 2 or 3 days ago. Facebook is great for reminding me scumbags are still alive. I'm like, oh my God, is that guy not dead? So I came across this guy, and he was a friend of my then roommate, and he would always come around. Dude was just like the bottom end loser that would always get laid. That never fucking ceased to amaze me. Yeah. How like there's always that one stumble bum that just pussy's being thrown at him. Like just high quality too. And so this guy was such the scumbag that he had this maneuver where these girls would be all into him, and he'd be like, hey, let's get matching tattoos. And he just pitched this tattoo that he'd been wanting for a while. And so he'd make it seem hilarious. Like it's like a friendship tattoo.
What?
But really, he just wanted like a fucking, I don't know, popsicle on his arm. So he was like, let's have it be this. And he'd try and twist it to where it would relate to them somehow. But really, it's just an idea.
Remember that time we saw that commercial for popsicles?
Yeah, you know.
That's when I realized I love you.
And he would dupe these girls who thought that they had like made this lifelong friend. And then they would pay for it.
Was this entire scheme just to get a tattoo paid for?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yes. So he would say he would court these women for about 3 weeks, you know, get them to really fall for him. And then, you know, and by the way, really work on the, you know, you need to take care of me, I'm a broken puppy angle. That,
wow.
Okay. There's two ways you can go when you're in your early 20s, as far as getting girls. The I've got things going on and I can pay for dinner, or I'm broke and probably addicted to something. I need you to take care of me. Honestly, either works depending on what woman you're talking to.
Let me suggest a third option. Just talk to them and be nice. Like, that works as well.
No, I'm saying you'll
talk
to them.
That's not like the first option, Bobby. Come on.
Yeah.
Have stuff going on.
Yeah. I was always the, like, hey, listen, I'm in college, or I have a job, you know? Like, I'm not a loser. These other guys like, oh, man, you're doing it wrong. I have nothing. Help me. And it would work. It would drive me insane. And so anyways, yes. So there are like probably a dozen, for his whole sleeve of tattoos, there's like a dozen women walking out around up there with just one of those each on them. And
Jesus.
Not knowing that they'd been scammed. Still.
And then at one point, you know, because they grow up and live normal lives and have kids and stuff. And at one point their son is going to be like, what does that tattoo mean? And she's going to like have a blank stare on her face. And it means don't make mistakes. Son.
No, I'm sure those dumb bitches will be like, oh, it's my very good friend who now lives in Missouri.
Oh, this tattoo, it means regret.
Don't they all?
No, I'm picturing like this is like a movie where like the seven of them like meet at some point and all their tattoos are like, holy shit, they form some kind of super team. I don't know. They get powers.
And they all got, and he got away with it too. What are some scumbag moves that either you or a friend have pulled off? You know what? Mainly
Bobby's
more
like, let me show you this tattoo I got.
All right, I got one, and let me preface this. Remember when I have made my statement before that men below the age of about 25 are mostly sociopaths?
Yes.
I put myself in that category, and this was a dumb, stupid thing to do, but I did it regardless, and I'm sorry I did it, but it happened, so here,
I'm just
honest.
Glad he didn't say irregardless, so thank you for that.
Yeah, let's just be honest about it. All right, when I lost my virginity somewhat late, about 18 years old, and the girl I lost it to happened to
that's
be...
That's not late, man.
Yeah, that seems normal to me. Yeah.
To all my friends, that was very late. But
they were lying.
No, they were... I was in the other room for most of them. With the video camera. So that's the story.
Wait, that's not the scumbag move? Come on.
For most of them. The other ones, I was in the room, so yeah.
So I lost my virginity to the girlfriend that I had at that point, and we were still in high school. She was actually a very evangelical Christian, but we had sex with each other, and then we were continuing to have sex, and it was going along okay. And then she went off to like a Christian retreat the summer after we graduated. So we graduated high school. She goes to this like Christian retreat for a couple weeks and comes back, and she's like, we're not having sex anymore.
Boo!
And let me tell you, if you don't want to have sex, that's fine. That's okay. For a young man, when you start having sex, coming to the point where you stop is like, wait a second, what did I do wrong? So in your head, you just start thinking, you analytically go, you're like, how do I fucking solve this? How do I get back to having sex again? And I came up with a somewhat scumbaggy plan.
I got a fake minister, we got fake married.
No,
I became best friends with God.
I will say this, the plan was dependent on her acting somewhat scumbaggy as well. So I kind of justified it in that sense. Not okay, but regardless, here's what I did. I wrote a fake journal diary, and I kept this journal underneath my... I wrote this entire fake journal. It was backlogged for like a week, so it didn't look like it just had one entry.
So you did what you do like when you're supposed to keep a log in school for something? You got different pens?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
We're going pencil, blue ballpoint, black ballpoint. You gotta pencil.
You got to wrinkle the papers a little bit so it doesn't look like it's fresh.
He's rubbing coffee grounds on it.
Yeah, lemon.
And
yeah.
This is the guy we're trusting to dig up artifacts and tell us that they're real.
That's right. He's thorough. So I made this whole fake journal. And in the, like the last few pages, the last few days, it was like, man, you know, I really respect her decision not to have sex. It's fine if that's what she wants. But I just feel like we've lost this closeness that we've had. It seems like it's negatively affecting our relationship. And I don't feel that same closeness to this person anymore. That kind of shit. Then I stuck it underneath my mattress. She came over, and we were hanging out. I had this journal tucked underneath my bed, and I told her, hey, just so you know, I have to go to the bank pretty soon. Do you want to come with me? I have to go before 5 o'clock. This was back in the days when you had to actually go into the bank to make deposits.
Like an asshole.
Yeah, like an asshole. And she's like, yeah, sure, let's go. And so as we're getting ready, I had this cup of water on my bed.
And I turned it to wine. I'm like, I told you, honey.
I had this cup of water next to my bed.
I had this Rube Goldberg machine set up.
Pretty much. And I purposely knocked it over so that the water spilled all over the mattress, and I was like, oh no, what am I going to do? If this seeps in, this is going to get mildewy and stuff, but I have to go to the bank. And her solution was, okay, as I had planned, you go, I'll clean this up. And I was like, oh, thank you. So I go in my car and I just start driving around the block because I didn't actually have to go to the bank. And I had given her
the
sheets.
You were like the Kaiser Soze of emotional manipulation.
I was. And so she changes the sheets. And of course, as she's changing the sheets, she discovers the journal underneath the bed. Now, here's the thing. It relies on her breaking confidence and reading my journal at the time. So that's how I justified it. So she reads it, figures out how I'm feeling in a way that doesn't seem like I'm trying to emotionally manipulate her, which I totally am trying to do. And then I come home, we have a discussion about it, and bang. And then from then on, we were banging again, so it was okay. So that, to me, is one of my more scumbaggy things that I did. It was underhanded and tricking, though I will say it did rely on her kind of doing a scumbag thing as well.
Oh, sure.
Nice. Very well done.
Thank you.
I applaud that.
Thank you.
I feel like you put so much effort into some of the things that you do. I don't even know if it's worth the payoff.
I
feel like you enjoy putting the effort in more than you
I enjoy executing a plan. That is...
Yes, you definitely do. Yeah.
I used a girl for her TV and her bagel bites for like a whole summer.
Oh, wow. What, did she have HBO? Or?
She did.
Okay.
She had the TiVo when it was new.
Oh, wow.
All right, here's the thing. So in the summer of 2006, I subletted my apartment at San Diego State. I went back to Costa Mesa for a summer. I moved into a motel room near the beach, and I got a job at a liquor store. And seriously, for that whole summer, best summer of my life, all I did was sleep till noon, hang out at the beach, work at the liquor store for a few hours, then go out and drink with my friends and chase girls all summer. That's it.
And cheap booze too. Gotta be working at a liquor store.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Hey, free booze. I do right where the cameras were.
That's right.
So anyways, I would actually drink in the fucking cooler. I was the one that installed the like bing bong just so I could hear them in the thing.
He invented the bing bong.
No, they didn't have one. And so I went to my boss, Mr. Khan. I'm like, hey, Mr. Khan, you don't have a bing bong thing. He's like, you don't need bing bong thing. You stay at counter. I'm like, yeah, but I had to sometimes, like, I made up some story.
Yeah.
And so, like, he let me go to and install, like, a little simple bell thing I got from Home Depot. So now I could sit in the fucking beer cooler drinking tall cans that I'd stolen from the back. And then all of a sudden, bing bong, time to go to work. So anyway, so that was right there. That's not scumbag number one thing.
Yeah.
But just stealing from this old Asian man that employed me. You're living in a motel. It's fine for a 21-year-old. That's how old I was at the time. But... sometimes, you know, you kind of miss an actual living room.
Oh, yeah.
You do. You sometimes get a little exhausted of it. So I meet this girl, Annie, who I was kind of into when I first met her, but lost interest pretty quick. But we went back to her house, and there's a big old flat screen TV with TiVo, and she like was making me food. I'm like, all right, I'm going to drag this out a little bit. However, she kept wanting to have sex, and I was growing less and less interested, so I became the chick. Like, I'd come over, and like, you know, I'd be like,
you said you went to a Christian retreat. You can't have sex anymore.
Yeah. Well, I would make up all of these excuses, and...
Full circle.
I did become the chick. Like, she'd be like, you know, trying to put her hand on my leg. I'd be like, come on, stop. Why can't we ever just watch TV and not have it be about that?
I'm not just a piece of meat.
I would say that, and she was not buying it.
She's like, why do you come over all the time? You don't want to be with me. And you're like, well, the wire. Fire is on right now. It's really good.
You said, how many more episodes of It's Always Sunny do you have TiVo'd here? Okay, three. I know how long this relationship is lasting.
Oh, my God.
Dave, do you have one?
I mean, compared to these stories, I just have normal shit. Like, guys that I knew growing up who would, like, start dating a girl and just run up all her credit cards. And, you know,
oh, my
just,
God. Yeah, no, that's worse.
Yeah. But that's, like, that's typical, I
that's
feel like.
Gripping.
For as far as scumbag moves, like your guy, okay. Like Bobby's, yours is such a fucking weird. Like, I'm gonna fake a journal and hide it and then stage a situation where she finds, like, you put so much fucking thought into
it. I did. I put a lot of thought into it.
If only you could use your powers for good.
Oh my God.
I do now. I use my powers for good now. I make podcasts. That's what. Oh, I make podcasts and I get vigilante justice.
You yes, certainly
this
do.
This is using your powers for good. Let's hear about this shit.
Guys, I have now, this week, I did my...
We need to make a theme song just for the fucking vigilante justice portion.
And I went to Sylvester Stallone doing the Judge Dredd, I am the law, coming over this. yes, I pulled off this week what I consider my favorite vigilante justice, I think, of all time. As you guys know, I've talked before about selling stuff on Craigslist. You get the people who constantly call and say they're coming, and they never do, right. And they constantly fuck with you. We were selling my wife's scooter. I got rid of my motorcycle a couple months ago. Now we're selling my wife's scooter. I had it up on Craigslist. Anytime you sell a cheap motor vehicle...
You guys are selling a lot of vehicles. Are you okay?
Yeah.
Is everything all right?
I told you we're not allowed to die anymore because we got a kid, so we got to get rid of all the dangerous shit. I got to get rid of my...
I feel more like they're like a fence. Like, people are just moving hot merchandise through them.
It's all a tax scheme. Yeah, I gotta sell my powered paraglider. I gotta sell everything. It's annoying. But so we're selling this scooter, and anytime you sell a cheap motor vehicle, you are gonna deal with the worst of society, and that's
poor people.
Yeah, no assholes who are gonna like just try and fuck with you the whole time. So I'm selling a scooter for like $600 at the time. I had a bunch of people texting me like, oh, I want to come see it. Now, I had decided at this point, dealing with enough scumbags, I did not want them coming to my house. And I also did not just have a setup to be checking out a vehicle at that point. So I was like, all right, meet me at this parking lot. And it was a parking lot nearby my house. I had one person, I want to buy it. I want to buy it right away. And I was like, I'm showing it on Tuesday. And they're like, no, I want to buy it today. And this was on Monday. And so I was like, all right, I guess let's set this up. Set up the thing. Guy never shows. I'm sitting in a parking lot just waiting for half hour. He texts me, I'm on my way, never shows up. It was kind of like your truck cover guy, you know, I'm in Chula Vista, and then he shows up 3 days later. I text him, you know, what happened? And he's like, sorry, I had to go home. No explanation, no nothing, just a text, I had to go home. Like, okay, you could have sent that to me an hour and a half ago while I was waiting in the grocery outlet parking lot for an hour and a half. Nothing. He texts me the next day. Okay, you're showing it today. Can I come by? And I was like, okay, fine. That seems about right. Why don't you come on by? Again, I make an appointment for him the whole nine yards. He never shows up. Now I'm pissed. Now I'm in vigilante mode of like, now I'm going to get you. And he finally...
He's putting on his costume.
Yeah. Yeah, and he texts me back.
I am the law.
He texts me back 2 days ago. Hey, man. Yeah, sorry about not showing up or, by the way, texting or anything yesterday. I just had some stuff going on. I'm really serious, though. I'm going to come see it. And I go, well, are you serious? Because you've stood me up twice. And he's like, absolutely, 100%. I'm so sorry. I was like...
Bob was like, I'm afraid I'm going to get hurt again. Yeah. He's like, no.
Read my journal. I told him, listen, it's especially hard for me because I don't live down here in the city of San Diego. I'm just going down there for work and I'm showing people a thing. But I live all the way up in the mountains up past Alpine. And he goes, oh, really? I was like, yeah. So if you want to, you can come look at the scooter, but I'm not going to drive it down there for you.
Wait, are you lying to the guy?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm on the guy's side now.
Nah,
fuck you.
He goes, all right, fine. I give him this address, which is way out up in the mountains, and I go, come on out. It happens to be an empty lot of property that I had been looking at at some point, so it's like, it's a lot, but it has an address. So I get a text, okay, I'm on my way, and I'm like, cool, just sitting at my house. I get a text, like, 2.5 hours later, because the place doesn't have cell phone service where you're at, and he's like, what the hell? I went to that place. There's no house there. And I was like, are you sure? Did you look long enough? Like, I mean, if you come back, I'll be waiting.
Oh, no.
Oh, Jesus.
Never got another text again, but sent this guy on like a 70-mile round trip snipe hunt out into the mountains.
That's pretty good.
Funny. Dude, anytime you try to sell anything online, you're just entering Dante's Inferno. Like,
yeah.
A friend of mine came in a small bar the other day, and he was using one of those Craigslist alternatives, like Let Go or whatever,
Offer Up.
Like yeah, Offer Up. But he was showing me the message. He was selling a guitar. He had it listed for $150. And a guy messaged him and said, $100 cash. And Jay wrote back, no. The next day, the guy wrote back, $80, but it has to be right now. I'm like, how do you go lower and insist on fucking meet? Like,
Yeah.
Who thinks?
But now I have conditions.
Yeah, like what the fuck?
That's it. You're giving me that for free.
People are just the fucking worst, dude.
Yeah.
What he should have done is set that guy to Alpine.
Hey, I have a question of how I should handle something. Friend of mine, you guys will both know who I'm talking about pretty quick, is, hit me up about a month ago. He used to be a comic. And he's like, hey, man, I've kind of going through a rough spot right now. You know, I really want to get back into comedy. Can you set me up with some gigs, man? I'm coming to you hat in hand. Can you get me on some shows? And I said, yeah, of course, man. So I made calls to two different promoters of shows I was doing this month.
Right.
Got him on both of them. He no-showed both of them.
Now, just for transparency, going through a rough patch kind of undersells it. He's been through some serious shit.
Yes.
However,
yeah.
To no-call, no-show, the second show, both of us texted him.
Yeah, yeah.
And didn't get a response.
After the first show, between the first and second show, did he give you an excuse?
Yes, he said he had to go to urgent care.
Okay.
And I'm like, okay, all right.
That's a good excuse.
Yeah, but two in a row, I'm like, was that fucking urgent care thing fake?
Now, has he gotten back to you about why he missed the second one?
Nope.
Yeah,
nothing. Have not heard from him. How are you going to go out of your way to contact me just to fuck me over? And maybe you look like an asshole to my fucking promoters that I went to bat for.
He's going
to
send Ryan a text. He's like, three shows, but only $80.
I want all the money.
And Ryan's going to be like, right now.
Ryan's going to be like, okay, next show's in Alpine. Here's the address.
Yeah, look real hard for this club. You're going to have to do some digging. Bring khaki pants. Speaking of last night's show again, since we had such a great time hanging out at Thursday night show, all of us, that's another thing I miss about when comedy was fun is the hang.
Yep.
You know, I don't hang anymore. I get there, I do my shit, I get paid, I leave.
Hang like, after a good show, especially.
Yes, yes. And I'm like, so now we had just done a bad show and had a great hang together. So then we do this good show, and I even told Aaron, don't wait up, man. It's me and the boys. We're doing this great room.
Right.
We're going to hang. And then immediately after, everyone's like, well, bye. I'm like, come on, you gotta have a beer. And like, Dave's like, nope. I'm like, Bobby, absolutely not.
No way, I got a baby at home.
I turn to Alan Henderson. He's wheeling his chair away from me as fast as possible. I'm like, what the fuck?
You can't have both. You can't have a good show and a good hang.
Yeah, I guess not. Evidently not. So like, now I have like hang blue balls. I was like, I was really hoping to have a good time here.
Hang blue ball sounds like a medical condition you wouldn't want to have.
No. So I ended up like ending my night at like a sketchy ass dive bar. And I realized it was the same dive bar I went to when I bailed from that really good show early, you know, I'm like where there was like a lot of nice people there and everything.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why do I always feel the need to end at the sketchiest place possible? I think it's a self-esteem thing. I think
keep
that every time I'm in a place where everyone's being nice to me and looks nice,
right.
I feel like I don't belong there. I don't deserve whatever they have to offer me.
That's a good thought.
I don't feel at home unless like everyone in the place looks like they're kicked out of Fog Hat for drugs.
Like Fog Hat will not kick you out for drugs. Okay.
Well, no, that's the thing. You can bring it to a specific level, and all these guys have achieved it. So I literally was walking up to this bar just to end my night to have one nightcap, and there's a lady out there who's vomiting and smoking at the same time.
Wow.
She was yakking. She'd stop, take a drag of her fucking Winston, and then she'd go right back to it.
That's ninja-level alcoholic.
And I was just like, perfect. And I walked in the door. I'm like, yep, that's where I belong.
Brian's like, I'm home.
Wouldn't it be great if she actually upped another level where she's like, I want to vomit and smoke at technically the same time, so she put the cigarette in her nose just so she could pull it both off?
Yeah, so I don't know what that is. I think it's a self-esteem thing. I think if you like dive bars, you have low self-esteem.
Yeah, or you just kind of like that theme, that feel, and $2 PBRs.
Yeah, you like cheap drinks.
Yeah. $3 Carl Strauss. I was in heaven. All right, let's call it a week. I'm Ryan for Dave and Bobby saying see you next week, cruising with the twos.
I will stab you if you say the wrong thing.
Ooh, yeah, time passing by. Oh, that time passing by. Oh, motherfucking time is passing by.